Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 164. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good money.
Graham Thickens.
You guys are far too upbeat for this early on a Saturday morning.
I was going to say good sunny morning.
Sunny,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Phil Wilson.
Howdy do.
How you guys doing today?
Awesome.
Jazzy.
Doing great.
Jazzy?
Jazzy. Where'd you get that music?
Music Alley. Pod Safe Music.
Podcast Alley, right?
Music Alley.
Music Alley, which is the Pod Safe Music Network.
That's right. And so I search for specific sorts of music, and actually some of these, when I'm listening to them, I want to get up and dance. So and then I also think about how great it would be to actually know how to play like that. Wouldn't that
be
awesome?
So did you search on honky tonk music for that one, or what was the genre?
Boogie woogie.
Oh, boogie woogie.
Yeah. So I'll look at all kinds of different stuff. So let's jump into the big stories of the week. And we should probably talk about the number one story, which is the Best Buy Brian Dunn story. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And it's just what an incredible thing that is.
It's like it went by so fast. It's like a trifecta. You know, first everyone thought it was the performance issues with the company. Then it was philandering. And now it's SEC investigation, apparently, or financial shenanigans of some sort with them hiring a couple of ex-SEC or U.S. attorney and an SEC compliance director. So, yeah, the story just keeps, you know, changing almost day to day.
Well, and I actually had a conversation about this last night with someone who shall remain nameless. But it was about the conjecture, and this was happening on Forbes and Fortune, a lot of other business mags, that Elliot Spitzer was set up to take a fall because they wanted to get him out of there. And he said, geez, I wonder if that happened at Best Buy with Brian Dunn. I wonder if they set him up so he would, who knows?
If I were the guy to be speculating, I would say that he didn't want to leave and he was forced out and this was the way to get it done. I just think the whole thing with the mistress and that sort of thing has been handled incredibly shitty by the press.
Yeah.
And I just think it's such a pointless thing. Look, we all know that a change needed to be made, whether it was, whether it was Brian Dunn's fault that where Best Buy is. Is one thing, but the fact of the matter is, it's the way we work in corporate America. We launch people, but the fact that this is all turning into a very scandalous piece. The fact is, the company needed to make a change. Probably he probably didn't want to. So now let's figure out a way that we can force him out. So
well, maybe Larry Ellison will hire him at Oracle.
It's like HP all over again.
It's like a Mark Hurd situation. Yeah. Where did that whole scandal go? I mean, I haven't heard anything about it.
It went away. They paid him off. They gave him a nice parachute.
No. I mean the whole alleged this and that. I mean
that's the thing. I mean that's the deal. The greater issue here is that Best Buy is in need of repairing and in need of fixing. Christ, we've been talking about that for 2 years. I mean. So maybe this is, maybe we take a little heat off Best Buy by making this all, Brian Dunn's fault. And he was obviously wacky and out of control. But, I think it's a bunch of bullshit. And, this poor young woman is, whether there was an affair or not, it's not for me to say. But this poor woman is like, well, what the hell happened here?
Yeah.
And Thomas Lee, learn to use fucking Twitter, will you?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm going to have to bleep that.
I know.
Or put an explicit tag on my podcast.
Phil's really heated up about this.
No kidding.
I am. I was reading David Brower's piece on this whole thing. And yeah, maybe Thomas Lee inadvertently sent a
DM.
He thought it was a DM. But he did it twice.
Oh, he did? Oh, I
thought he did. Yeah, David Brower said he did it twice. He mentioned her name twice in tweets. And, you know, Twitter is a great tool. It can be a great tool, but come on, if you can't reach somebody by phone, if you can't reach somebody by email, well, you can't reach somebody, you know, by stopping by their office. Really? You got to go to Twitter to try and get them to comment?
It's worth a try.
Journalists are all over Twitter. And really, now raise your hand if you haven't accidentally sent a DM as a tweet. I mean, pretty much everybody who starts using Twitter gets screwed up doing that. So, you know, it's easy to understand that he could make a mistake. I didn't realize he did it twice, though.
Well, you know, I completely understand that. Look, I completely understand that. But if you're talking about some young woman's life here, you got to be a little bit more careful. I mean, you've got to think about that stuff. I realize that in the quest of the scoop, and the, you know, in the quest of finding out who this person is, he got a little sloppy, maybe. I don't know, but it's just, come on,
You know what I'm wondering is how long was that tweet up there? Because you'd think he'd have realized his mistake quickly, and it's like, does Brower sit and monitor Thomas Lee's tweet stream 24 hours a day? How the hell did he see that thing? Because you'd think it would have almost been instantaneously
It was retweeted by several people.
Well, then it sat up there for a while then.
Yeah, it's out there.
Well, once it's out there, it's out there. But, you know, again, I just I feel sorry for this young woman. I feel sorry for I got to feel sorry for Brian Dunn. I mean, I don't know the guy personally at all. Maybe he is a philanderer. I don't know. Maybe he has misappropriated funds. I don't know. The greater thing is this is about Best Buy needs to get a new CEO. Best Buy needs new guidance. Best Buy needs new direction and not. You know, whether this guy was dipping his wick in company wax, you know, I don't.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and you know,
Wrong? Am I wrong, guys? I mean, tell
that's
me.
That's a crazy metaphor. Let me put that out there. But
no, wait a minute.
I've got the tinfoil hat on now. I like your conspiracy theory that this is the board's way of like, look away from the situation.
I don't know, man. That is a conspiracy theory, that's for sure. But
that
I don't know.
Dunn and this whole scandal as a way to like divert people's attention.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the board would do that. But one thing I wanted to say is, you know who I feel really sorry for in this whole thing? Brian Dunn's wife.
Yeah.
Okay. And or children. And I don't even know if he has any. But one thing I read this morning on one of the stories was that. He'd been accused of inappropriate behavior with a subordinate and almost like workplace behavior. I thought, well, wait a minute. Is he just like putting his arm around her in the office and slapping her on the butt or something? I mean, you know, I mean, how bad was this behavior? I don't know, and I don't think I really want to know, but I suspect it may end up coming out.
To put it into context, though, whatever he was doing it with someone that was 1 year old when he started working for Best Buy.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I totally agree with you. Okay.
I don't know.
Let's jump up. Wait a minute. Let's go up to the high road a little bit here.
Let's get out of the gutter.
Yeah. I was going to say, on another note, I find it very interesting to, you know, of the long list of articles that have come out from Forbes to, you know, the Sun Times or the Sun Current here in Lakeville. I don't know. Everybody's theory on how to save Best Buy. It's funny to see this big swing as, you know, you've got to be hyper-focused on service. No, you have to be the Amazon.
Either Apple or Amazon.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Take your pick.
The only choice they've got is to go after the kind of an Apple-esque high-touch model. I don't think they can out Amazon.
I don't think so either, but I tell you what, I don't often tout Robert Cringely's articles.
Yeah, wasn't
but this
that?
One.
Oh, well, well, he was right on. He's right on. The
he
money.
Was right on when
yeah,
he said
he
Best.
Was almost vicious, though.
Well, he said Best Buy is doomed, but I saw a tweet about this whole thing, and it was going back and forth, and it's a guy with a local agency here in town who said Best Buy is not.
Well, I don't think they are either.
And that's what Crinsley's article is all about, is that, you know, Best Buy will charge me $20 for cable I can buy anywhere else for $5.
The brand doesn't hold. The brand promise inherent in the name itself does not hold water.
Right.
That's what Randy and I have been talking about too. Randy Pixelated brought that up, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That the brand doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
because it
exactly.
isn't.
Well,
and, you
I
know.
Mean, they've got some serious issues with, I mean, the thing that hasn't been discussed is the tax arbitrage issue that Amazon benefits from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you go in and you look at, like buying a TV, for instance. So you look at that, I mean, you're looking at $50-$60 just in tax.
Right.
You know?
And
that makes a big difference to people, you know?
Oh, hell yes.
And I know you're supposed to claim your you know, tax, you know, in your tax returns, your purchases with Amazon. But I'm not sure how many people actually do that.
No. Wait a minute. You are?
Yeah, you are.
Uh-oh. Quick, call the accountant. They're due on Tuesday.
Good point, Graham.
How many states collect the tax from Amazon now? There's got to be several, because wherever they have a physical presence, they have to collect Amazon has to collect sales tax in those states. And some have even overridden that. Was it New York that even succeeded in charging sales tax for Amazon, collecting sales tax for Amazon purchases, even though I don't know that Amazon has a physical presence in New York, do they?
Boy,
oh, everybody
question.
Has a presence in New York.
Well, you would think they'd have an office of some sort, but they avoid having physical presences in as many states as they can.
Well, I gotta tell you though that
they're on floating barges in the Atlantic.
Yeah, right.
But here's
the
thing,
cloud, baby.
Here's the thing though, because this is actually over time I think is going to hurt even Amazon, and maybe hurt Best Buy even more, which is the amount of people that I know, and I've done it myself, who decide on a product and then they seek out the best price. You know, they'll use a pricegrabber.com or something else, and they'll look through the list and they'll see some reseller on there and say, geez, I have no idea who these people are. And then you look at the reputation and you look at some of the feedback and things of that nature, and you say, okay, I'll use a credit card and I'll take a risk. Well, so I did that with a Heil PR40 microphone that I'm using right now. And I bought it through a ham radio store in Southern California that I'd never heard about.
Oh, come on, stop it. You are a ham radio guy.
Yeah,
I've
right,
seen the tower
right.
in your backyard.
Would that be
yeah.
ham surfers? No.
Yeah.
I'm just yeah.
It's got a big Yagi right outside his house.
He does. Big old sucker.
Yeah, and of course, the social media breakfast people are saying, a ham radio, is that made out of bacon? ooh, ba-dum-bum. Anyway, but I saved on the kit. I saved about $100. And so you look at that and you say, well, geez, you know, I could have bought it from Amazon, or I could have bought it from, you know, wherever, fill in the blank. But what's happening is that people that are savvy and that have any e-commerce savvy are seeking out the best deals. And I think we're not done yet seeing some of the disruption.
No, we're not. And I think that Best Buy really has to do a couple of things rather quickly. Is one is they have to take on Amazon online, which they really haven't done in any significant way. And if I were looking at this as someone advising, you know, whoever takes over, I would say you don't have enough time to do it organically. You've got to just buy stuff. So, you know, buy a Newegg or whatever.
Right, right.
And merge that sucker in. You know, I would buy even non-traditional stuff like the iFixit.com guys.
I think
you know, they've got great content. They've got a great community and a content yeah. management system for doing the kind of thing that Best Buy should do, which is, you know, deep tutorials about how to use technology.
Yeah, well, I think the Napster thing was the key, and they just kind of blew that. I think that.
Well,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Well, that was in the right direction.
Oh, it's not in the right direction. They were looking for a pirate ship, and they bought the Love Boat, for God's sake.
But what you're talking about, Tim, was not unlike what the original strategy was back when BestBuy.com was launched in early 2000 under Brad Anderson and John Walden. They had a partnership that I helped – coordinate with a firm called eTown that had a lot of content, a huge database of content. And this was exactly the strategy that they were pursuing under Brad. And Brad was a real visionary, and Walden was a serious e-commerce exec who would come out of Peapod. You remember Peapod in the 90s? And anyway, they had that kind of strategy. But jumping forward, what did you think about the conjecture that, in fact, he was even quoted, that Brad was saying if he was called, he would consider coming back?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amazing.
I thought that was amazing. And I thought, you know what? That would be cool, because I think Brad is amazing. And, you know, and I was shocked to see him say that. You know, but I think that's his loyalty to Richard Schultz and the rest of the board. You know, he'd be hard pressed to turn it down. But I don't know. I don't think there's a big likelihood that they'll go that way. But
I don't think the stockholders, the board, or the stockholders will want to do anything that would even hint of going backwards.
Yeah, well, yeah. And it's an outsider. That's the jump, the leap that they have to make, is get fresh blood in there instead of, you know, staying so inwardly focused as they've done with their management team for a long time.
As an interim, while they're doing the search committee's doing the search, I think it would not be a bad idea, because you don't want the whole organization to drift.
That's true. Yep.
And so right now it's being led by a member of the board who doesn't have any experience in retail or technology marketing. So,
however, medical devices could be what fills in the place of DVDs.
Maybe.
The guy's a hell of a basketball player, too.
Oh, well, there you go. A court right there in the middle.
Did you see that he's George Mikan's grandson, I think? Or is it nephew? I think it's grandson.
I think it's grandson, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gears. And, Graham, you were the only one that made it to Minibar, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was like a series of events that kept all of us away except Graham.
Yeah, and it was amazing. I was at the pre-party the night before. A couple hundred people showed up for that, and even though it was on Good Friday. So we said a prayer and then drank beer. All day Saturday. I've never seen a line of people jamming the entrance as early as they were Saturday morning. There had to be four or five hundred people backed up waiting for them to open the doors officially at 8 a.m. You know, they were all jammed into the lobby. You could hardly get into the lobby. And I don't know if it was a rush for T-shirts or what, but they seemed to have plenty of T-shirts. But overall, it was just, incredible, very well put on, gets better and better every year. Anyway.
So how many people were at Minibar? I mean, was it the same turnout?
Jamie Thingelstadt took the stage as one of the speakers at the opening, and he said they had 1,300 register.
Oh, but wow. How many showed up?
Well, who knows? I don't know if they even keep an accurate counter, if they can. I suppose they try. I didn't ask them. But, of course, people come and go all day long.
Yeah.
But it was at least as big as last year or more. And I think they said 1,200 last year. So,
They set the standard, that's for sure.
Oh, man. And you know, I mean, they fill the venue. And you know, there were rooms where sessions were, you know, backing out into the hallways. The theater held some of the more popular sessions, and it was darn near full. And that thing holds 300 and some people, I think, maybe 350.
What was the highlight, Graham?
Oh, you know, the highlight was the hallway conversations, always. And that prevented me from getting into a lot of sessions. But, you know, the opening round of sessions had some popular talks. Certainly the funding panel is always a biggie, and that was held in the theater. So that was good. Let's see. There were some other good events or good sessions during the day. The Global Robotics Innovation Park was announced at the event by Nina Street, and that's going to be a for-profit incubator for robotics companies, and it's going to, and it's going to be anchored by none other than Recon Robotics, which is a very successful local company in the particularly in the military and defense robotics industry. And so that was kind of a cool announcement. She sort of had been in stealth and announced it for the first time at Minibar. And there were a number of other great sessions. I don't have the list of sessions in front of me, but I think it was, you know, the energy and the discussions going on in the hallways, and the talk about a lot of new startups that are coming on stream. I was delighted to hear that KidBlog had been out in Palo Alto in the Bay Area the week before a Minibar and had gotten some traction with funding. Some early investors and they were just higher than a kite, of course, because it looks like it's really going to turn into a business. and lots of other talk about some local startups. The guys at Thrillon.com are into soft launch. They weren't there, but there was talk about them, a lot of the big players were there. Michael Gorman, of course, they being a sponsor, and some other angels that I saw and chatted with there. So it was awesome. Now, many people couldn't be there because of Easter weekend.
Yeah.
And our friend Robert Stevens said he was really bummed that because he kind of wanted to be able to sort of act as the host at Best Buy, even though he was, you know, as his final sort of gesture, even though he's officially out the door now for what, 2-3 weeks at least since he announced. But he couldn't make it because his father had passed away. So he was out of town through Easter weekend, I guess. But, I all in all, I think it was a huge success. And you know, you wonder, where can it go from here? How much bigger can it get?
Yeah.
And hopefully Best Buy, knock on wood, will be able to keep hosting it.
So how much, if you were to look at the mix of sessions, how much was on sort of web-based, web apps, hardware like Recon Robotics and mobile?
Good question. I don't believe there were any robotics presentations per se, other than the announcement of this incubator park, which has yet to be located or announced where it will be located. It's a ways off from actually happening. But I don't think, I don't recall a lot of hardware-oriented sessions. There were some HTML5 kind of sessions, certainly design related sessions, since that's always been a part of Minibar. You know what I was shocked? There were no big data sessions that I saw.
Really?
And one of my best associates in big data didn't even bother coming to the event. He might have if there would have been sessions on that. A lot on mobile, a lot on building development teams, on managing a global, virtual teams, that sort of thing. The head of mobile development at W3I, which was a sponsor of the event too, but a guy by the name of Cliff, I think Robbins, talked about how he coordinates his whole team, which includes some offshore developers over in Sofia, Bulgaria, and they're working with MentorMate in that regard. So that was quite interesting. And there was a session on how to ramp quickly in a fast growth environment, particularly from a development standpoint. One of the developers from Instratus was in that session. And there was recruiting related things. I think Paul DeBettings did even two sessions that were related to recruiting, particularly developers, but I think recruiting in general. So it was well attended the whole day. There weren't a lot of people that left early, as I've kind of noticed in past years. You know, it gets a little thin about 4:30 or so.
Yeah.
When they popped open the beer at about 5:30, that place was still doggone full, you know.
So you could tell because you couldn't get to the bar as fast as usual.
And I had to leave after just a beer to get to a family event, but it was still going strong. I suspect it went till 7 or later easily. So
another great event.
Yep. Yep. And Ben and Luke and Adrian, you know, did a bang up job, and they've got so many volunteers now. It's crazy. I mean, they need to pull this thing off, you know.
Yep.
And a longer list of sponsors all the time.
Exactly. Well, listen, let's shift gears. We have a guest lined up. We wanted to talk a little bit about mobile. And of course, when we talk about mobile, we always like to talk with Lisa Foote from MixMobi. Steve, you want to go ahead and get Lisa on the line, and we can chat a little bit about what's going on in the world of mobile?
Absolutely.
Does that sound good to you?
Always sounds good to me. Plus, Lisa's a delight.
So true.
And knows so much.
She's so bubbly.
This is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. We're talking about you. We're talking about how bubbly you are. This is Steve.
How bubbly I am. Good thing I had that second cup of coffee.
So bubble, damn it.
That's right. We have high expectations.
Is this bubble on demand?
Bubble on demand.
That's right.
I love it. How are you all this morning?
Just fine, thank you. We chatted mini bar. We went. We talked about Best Buy. We've had all sorts of great conversation. And you know, one of the other big stories from last week was the purchase of Instagram by Mr. Deep Pockets himself, Mark Zuckerberg, and Facebook. So you know, Instagram, mobile, Lisa Foote. So there you go.
There you go. So the most interesting thing that I observed or read about that deal was the fact that Instagram had just closed a $50 million investment round the week before, which is interesting. And the speculation is that when the Instagram Android app hit the market and had over 1 million downloads almost instantaneously.
Well, I was one.
Yep, that Facebook basically looked at that, and everybody knows, and they've pretty much admitted that they're moderately behind in mobile. And look, what is Facebook? Facebook is a photo sharing app, right? I mean, that's a lot of what Facebook delivers.
Yep.
And the speculation is that Facebook looked at that performance of Instagram with Android, and just the word I saw in Forbes was panicked. I don't know that I'd put it quite that strongly, but that they just basically said, you know, Instagram owns this space, and we can't have them out there as a competitor.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they snatched them right from the arms of Twitter too, because I think Twitter could very likely have been an acquirer of Instagram, especially since Jack Dorsey was invested in it. But yeah, that $50 million funding round valued them at $500 million. And what, a week or so later, they get bought for $1 billion.
Not
so
bad.
The original, I think I read where Andreessen's firm did a 280x on their original investment.
Yeah, I saw that.
They wrote one of the first checks. I basically think the whole thing was an inside job. I mean, Andreessen and another guy from Baseline Ventures both wrote Instagram $250,000 checks back in, would have been 2009 maybe, or early 2010. And Andreessen's a big investor in Facebook, you know, so it's a really intertwined valley thing. And there was a great piece in the New York Times today about how those valley connections paid off.
For it's pretty close there. Yep.
Yep.
So, well,
I think that's right. And I think we're finally seeing mobile as really starting to have its moment in the sun. On Thursday, the Google earnings conference call, they basically said mobile, you know, mobile is our deal, mobile is our engine, mobile is key to, in fact, they called it the backbone of their advertising strategy. So that's fascinating to see these things, you know what I mean, to see these comments and see these actions crop up.
So how do you feel about the downtrending in the cost per click that Google's able to get because mobile's driving it down?
Yeah, and I think that's all organic and natural and okay. It's hard for us, and I literally mean us, those of us on this call, to remember that while it's great that the U.S. now has 50% smartphone penetration, that glass is still half empty.
Yep.
So there's still a ways to go. Do I think it's, you know, eventually going to become like mobile, 95 plus? Obviously, absolutely. Probably sooner rather than later. But having said that, again, it's not there yet. I just find it fascinating that as that penetration goes up and as people like Google, who people in the advertising industry respect, calling it the backbone of their advertising strategy, that's gonna get some attention.
But with this valuation on Instagram, and it's at the, you know, if you just look at it, it's just an iPhone app and now an Android app. It's not, you know, a social network per se.
No web app, no website, no web.
Right.
App.
So, does this signify that we're in the some sort of a mobile web bubble kind of period where we're seeing crazy deals like this?
Yeah, there has been some talk about is this feeling a little bubblicious. I don't think so. I don't think you're in a bubble if U.S. smartphone penetration is only at 50%. I mean, I think it might be front running it a little bit, but it doesn't feel super bubbly to me yet. But that's just very gut. I mean, I don't have any statistics to base that on. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I think it is. I think that we're kind of seeing similar sorts of things that we saw back in 1999 with the first tech bubble, where you're seeing crazy IPOs and crazy valuations. But I can see why Facebook did this, because it probably is worth more than $1 billion of value with their upcoming IPO to take a potential competitor and a potential partner of, say, someone like Google off the table beforehand.
But let me throw this out, and Lisa, have you do a smell test on it, because I've been thinking about this a lot and reading the articles and so forth, and I thought, okay, what is the typical mobile behavior with Facebook? For the most part, you check it every once in a while. But the mobile behavior with Instagram, which is why they've gone in a year and a half to 30 million plus users, is you want to snap things and manipulate them and upload them because you want to participate, or you want to throw something out there for people to look at, and it's much more active than passive. Facebook's mobile app is more passive, and that you got to do a lot more if you want to upload photos and so forth. And so I really looked at that and said, it makes sense from the standpoint of putting something out there and integrating it with the Facebook mobile app that gets people participating more in a mobile way with Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll also go back to Tim's comment. Tim, I would observe two completely opposite things. So one facet of Instagram that supports the bubble theory is that Instagram has no revenue and had no plans for any way of figuring out revenue, which, you know, for those of us who have ground out startups, kind of makes us grit our teeth, right? So that would argue it's bubbly, and I heard your comment that it's probably worth $1 billion for them to take them out of the competitive set, you know, to themselves. So that's on the bubble side. Against the bubble side is, again, what you just said, that it was worth it to them.
Yeah,
and
no,
To me, what says bubble is the same thing as in the housing market bubble. When you buy something not with the intention of getting value from it, but with the intention of flipping it, because you really believe that this is such an inflated, overvaluing period that you can just, you know, harvest the difference between purchase price and selling price. And I don't really see that behavior quite there yet.
No, obviously they believe there's value in it, or they wouldn't be buying it. But I agree with you. I don't really think it's a bubble, especially when you look at all the other companies out there that potentially could be acquired for at least that much. There was a great post on Business Insider called 11 companies that could get bought for $1 billion tomorrow. And, you know, you have to stop and remember Square being one. That's definitely valued at more than $1 billion.
Yeah, but that's a real business.
True. Yes.
Right.
And,
yeah,
it's making money.
iPhone app,
but,
you know?
But that's not the only one on this list. You know, there's
right.
Yelp, there's Spotify, there's Airbnb, there's, you know, all of these companies, Groupon, Living Social, could buy Fab, they're saying, you know, Bleacher Report could be acquired by Yahoo Sports, you know, there are and Google could take out Path before Facebook acquires it. There are valuations of many companies in that range that are relatively early. Some are into revenue stage, possibly, but you know, it's happening, and the market is is valuing these companies at these levels.
I think this Instagram just hit the jackpot. They had the right product at the right time. They didn't build a business, and they got extraordinarily lucky.
I described just that way to somebody yesterday, Tim. I completely agree. It's a little freakish, right?
Yeah. I mean, if a business like Square makes complete sense for someone like Apple to buy them, you know?
Yep.
And there would be good value there.
Or
yeah.
Visa, which is already invested in them.
Absolutely. Well, except, though, that Apple's got over 100 million credit cards.
Yeah, they don't need
And they don't need anybody.
No, that's a great post by Jason Calacanis about that.
I just saw that.
Isn't that a good one?
Yeah,
I mean, he's saying that's going to make Apple a $1 trillion company overnight. You know, just the credit cards that they have, the payments business, iPayments, or whatever you want to call it, you know.
Well, Lisa, what are your thoughts about what's going on with Windows Phone, and does it have any chance of market traction?
You know, interesting. I've been reading some hands-on reviews with it, and even one columnist, and I apologize, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, who tried to live with an entire suite of Windows devices, just, you know, put away all of his other, put away Google Mail, put away his Mac, etc. And while it doesn't feel as though, I mean, they're going out, right? They're giving developers a lot of money. I mean, they're really throwing a lot of money against this, right? They're kind of almost feels like they're last stand in mobile. But it's hard to remember. 2 years ago, if someone had told you Google Android is going to go from 0 to 48% market share in 2 years, would you have believed it?
Not a chance.
No.
I think that's at 51%.
I would have said, can I have a drag on that doobie? Lisa?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you would have been like, you know, can I have some of whatever drugs you're taking?
Yeah.
And, you know, so that can happen. I mean, we are, as I've often said, we're not permanently wed to our devices. And, you know, it could happen. It could happen. The thing that I think weighs against it is the fact that corporations are so much less wedded to both hardware platforms, look at RIM, right? And also, they're getting less and less Nazi-ish about their, you know, you must use Microsoft Word. If they still had control of what people have to use, if you have to use Excel, if you have to use Word, I'd give it more likes. I'd give it a better chance. But it just doesn't seem, you know, the whole bring your own device to work movement, it just doesn't seem as though, I don't know, it's a beautiful device, it's a beautiful OS. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Oh, I think it's got some chances. I mean, it's got a better chance than RIM's got. There's no doubt about that. I think they're using a lot of tried and true techniques. But, you know, launching the Lumia 900 at $99, that's a pretty good loss leader concept. I mean, both companies have something at stake that way. You know, Nokia obviously wants to maintain some market share, or get back some market share, but also Microsoft knows that they need to get this OS in the hands of users so they can start building fans. And, you know, I agree with you, Lisa. It's a pretty good looking interface, and it works very well. And, you know, one of the things that I've read most probably prominently about its performance is the Lumia 900 is actually using, you know, not as high tech of components and getting better results, better performance out of those pieces, including the single core processor that they're using as opposed to a dual core. Yeah, and they're actually getting better performance from it than it has been in the past. So.
Yeah, no, I think they've really got to rev that that hardware though, because that's controlled by Microsoft and they're about a year behind everybody else. So
yeah.
They've got to have a high resolution screen and they've got to have a better processor in order to compete. But with Nokia, I mean, Nokia has shown that they can really put together great hardware on the par of Apple. I mean, this is beautiful stuff.
I think you've got to look at this is just the beginning. You've got to get people starting to play with the Metro interface. You've got to get it in their hands and not necessarily worry about it being a vibrant experience right now. Get it low cost, get it in their hands, get them playing with it. I think it's a sound strategy. Will it be successful? I guess we'll have to see, but I don't know. I'm kind of interested to spend a little more time with that phone.
Well, see, here's what
I think they're going to have to also get the developer ecosystem going a lot more than they have right now.
That's exactly where I was just going to go, Tim, because you know what? Microsoft is brilliant at partnering and alliances and building that ecosystem. And, you know, you think about all the Microsoft certified software engineer certificates that are out there and people that got bumps in pay because of that. But that actually brings me to that patently Apple post about Apple reveals new whiz bang no code content authoring tool for iOS.
And I knew we'd get to content.
Yeah, of course we would. Yeah.
But just bear with me a minute. Just bear with me a minute. So if you look at building an ecosystem and you look at building a participatory model around your operating system and your device and so forth, the more people that can play in that sandbox, the more they're going to push that device forward in the adoption. If you're a developer, you're going to look and say, okay, so if it's a smartphone, I'm going to do Android first and then iOS for the iPhone. And then maybe we'll do an iPad version because they dominate the tablet space. Am I going to do a Windows Mobile? Well, yeah, I mean, if we've got enough traction and so forth, maybe we'll do that. But it's way, way down on the curve in terms of where we're going to do that. And yet, if you can get the users to be able to participate so that corporate people can build applications, quote unquote, even though they might be cheesy and low level and not that great. Now, all of a sudden, you've got users involved in publishing and building things for the platform. And now, essentially, you've engaged your users in the ecosystem. And I think that's going to be the next accelerant. And so if Microsoft, I'm looking at all this stuff on the screen, sorry. If Microsoft can figure out how to do that so that everybody can participate in the Windows ecosystem from a user standpoint, because I think that's really where we are right now. It's not just the developers that matter, which is always the way it's been. And today it's the users that matter. We're blogging, we're taking video, we're taking photos, we're doing all this stuff from a content creation standpoint. And so many people have pent up demand over the fact that, hey, I see a market opportunity and I want to build something and deliver something without spending $50,000 to have it built.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now that will open up a lot of opportunity. And if Microsoft could come up with some sort of a development tool for Windows Phone that's like what that Apple patent looks like, they could really probably jumpstart their ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So let me ask Lisa one question, though. When we get to Windows 8, and presumably that will be the same OS running on the desktop and on the mobile device, do we think that will spur the market for adoption of Windows Phone?
You know, it's such a big ecosystem, right, with the carriers, with the retailers. It's almost as though they'll have to have that slot machine come up, you know, correctly for every single component for them to get much traction. I certainly give them better chances than I give RIM from coming back from the dead. I mean, they've made so many mistakes. And having said that, I don't know. I really don't know. Like I said, I think they would just have to hit absolutely everything correct and execute flawlessly again across that whole ecosystem to really think what it would take for them to even get to 10%.
Where's
that going to come from? People who would have otherwise bought Android or iPhone? I don't know.
I think going after Android is going to be their play with a little enterprise kind of a thing. Cannibalizing RIM is obvious, but then going after Android, I don't think they're going to really in the consumer space really take on.
You thin out the herd. You go for the weaker of all the herd. And I think that Apple is just too powerful. And I think that RIM's easy target. They're the calf wandering away from the herd. And
But Android is too. but Android is too from the standpoint of the fragmentation. I mean, if Microsoft can offer developers an easier, environment in which to create apps, it's certainly not easy in Android. It's a nightmare. And mm-hmm. ask any developer. It's obvious there. How many different flavors are there? And
right, but there's
how many different phones? And
but there's hundreds of millions of handsets out there. So that's what developers are really concerned about.
I don't necessarily believe that, Tim, as much as, if I look at, and Lisa, you and I've had this conversation so many times, when I first started going to things like Mobile Twin Cities, and I was always amazed, and this was back 2-3 years ago, or maybe even 4 years ago, when RIM was still a player, how many developers weren't developing for that platform? They were developing for the next platform. They were all giddy about iOS, and then they were all giddy about Android, which is one of the reasons RIM has failed, is because nobody got giddy about it. Nobody really cared, even though they clearly had the most handsets in the field. So,
but Microsoft has the opportunity and is certainly pulling out all the stops to get excitement around Windows.
No doubt about that.
And they certainly have the money.
Starting with the event we're going to attend on the 19th, right?
Yeah.
At Best Buy.
Right.
So,
at the store. And
I will say that to me, the Microsoft attempts really do feel like tying a pork chop around the neck of the ugly kid to get the dog to play with it. And I just think that, for developers who have such a sense of coolness, right? I don't see any of the really progressive developers I know saying, hey, get me. You know what I mean? They just, they don't have that cool factor going for them.
We have a couple in town here that are that will have apps or already do on the new or have them developed for the new platform. And one is the Conquer Gaming guys who Windows. And I don't know if you guys realize it, but W3i has a dog in this hunt too, and they're going to be part of the coming out party. At a high level with mm-hmm. Microsoft. So that'll be kind of exciting to see that on the 19th.
Yep. I wish them the best, because everything that moves the industry, everything that moves the adoption, everything that moves the developers forward is exciting for the industry. So go for it, guys.
So sure. Lisa, what are you jazzed about coming up here? Anything exciting in the near future that you're jazzed about?
I can talk about publicly yet, but we have we have some fun things that we're researching and working on.
Nice.
Sorry to be mysterious.
Yes.
But not quite ready to be talked about publicly. But we're seeing good momentum and good revenue growth for our platform for MixMobi, and got a nice shout out from one of our clients, Mall of America, yesterday, and that was really nice on Twitter. So, we're making good progress. Like I said, the whole industry just feels like it's really starting to accelerate right now.
But we put keyloggers on all your computers, so we'll just wait for the logs to come in.
There you go.
Just kidding.
Great, guys. Well, it's been great talking to you today.
Same. As always, good to talk to you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There she is, the queen of mobile, ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Foote.
Yes.
So we got stuff coming up this week, do we not?
We do. This looks really fascinating, this D school at COCO.
And I hopped on that as soon as I saw that link because I hadn't seen it before. And of course, all of the small, you know, what do they call them? The crash course or whatever, the 1 day events. All the free tickets are gone for that.
Yeah.
There are paid seats available for that. And then there's the workshops, but they're $1,500, I think, something like that.
Well, so. I got to tell you though, that, and this gets into our home furnishings trend business, is that, design thinking is the only place that anyone's head's at now in corporate America with respect to product development, product management, is how do we look at our users and processes and products and how everything fits together and how do we design it such that not only is it aesthetically pleasing, but that it materially changes how people interact with it. And it's just, it's almost like everybody's getting smart about user interface design and user experience and design thinking stuff. And I think this is really cool that they're doing this down there.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. I sat in on the little hot dog lunch they had the other day because I just happened to be there and Don Ball invited me in, and it is fascinating stuff. But, but it's bringing these high buck workshops at Stanford to Minneapolis. And I'm not really sure how the pricing thing is going to work out yet, but it seems like she was talking about there are going to be ways for, you know, like nonprofits to participate in these things.
Yeah, I think there are some discounts for nonprofits and that sort of a thing. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I'd love to go to the crash course thing. It's just a matter of finding the time and the budget for that sort of thing.
Well, yeah. One thing that's interesting is for those that are listening that have iOS devices, the iTunes University has universities and colleges and K-12 courses and so on. Stanford is one of the key participants. So is Harvard and MIT in terms of delivering free courses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want stuff like Introduction to Linear Dynamical Systems, or Introduction to Robotics even, they're free.
Hmm.
And you can go in and watch videos and take the entire course. Now, of course, unless you pay them money, you can't get credit.
Right.
Obvious reasons. But the courseware is no charge. So
yep.
That's pretty cool.
There's a lot of that going on with some startups. What are they out in the valley? I mean, education, online education is a hot thing out in the valley with some richly funded startups. And just read about another one recently. It's a big, big area. But Stanford will still continue to charge their big bucks. It's $50,000 a year now to go to Stanford.
Wow.
So, and that isn't going to be going down anytime soon, but.
Well, thankfully we have the University of Minnesota here who's doing Mini WebCon.
Yes.
Nice.
Which is coming up.
Very nice.
Thanks, Phil. The 16th of April. And then, our buddy Leif Larson at Workface, is driving this thing called SaaS class, Software as a Service Smarts, part of SaaS Camp 2012. Down at COCO on Saturday the 21st.
Yeah, a week from today.
Yep.
And I'm hoping to get to that.
Then the MHTA Spring Conference. This ought to be interesting because this is the first full year under new leadership. And they've redone the site and their newsletters are better and they're actually doing a lot in terms of content. So
yeah,
it should be interesting to see what they do.
Their site looks really a whole lot better. Oh. I can't believe it. And and I'll say one thing for Margaret and her people. They put on a really good robotics event the other day at the U West Bank that I happened to slip into at the last minute. Andrew Wittenborg let me come in and tweet about it, and it was excellent. They had a guy from the Office of Science and Technology who's a robotics prof at Carnegie Mellon, has been for 30 years. He's one of the top robotics guys in the country. He spoke, and the fellow from our local Robotics Alley, which is a pretty exciting organization, he spoke, and it was great. It was very well attended. I think they had Amy Klobuchar speaking first before I got there. I missed that part, but it was well attended, but and very well run. I mean, it's what they call their management or leadership series, I think, or something like that. And they do these things occasionally. And I agree. It should be interesting to see how much better the spring conference will be this year, yep, too.
And what else?
WordPress coming up on the 25th, right, Tim?
Yep.
Will you bask in the afterglow of another website challenge?
I don't know. Hey, we launched it.
Hey, great.
Great. Let's put the link in the show notes. And we'll
give us the URL.
I will. URL.
And then Predictive Analytics Forum. This sounds like a barn burner.
Oh, well, it actually will be, because, I mean, they're rolling three things into this, web and social media analytics, big data, and predictive modeling. This is an organization, the Mini Analytics Forum, that's actually been going on for about 10 years.
Really?
These guys, there's some powerful stuff going on in this town. And it's going to be held at Medtronic Moundsview facility, which is a big campus. And one of the co-organizers is the head of predictive analytics at Medtronic, Sean Larson. And the other fellow co-organizing is Dan Atkins, who's a longtime analytics guy. And I helped him get a connection with Robert Stevens, who's going to speak. And they'll have several other great speakers with local firms that are involved in analytics. I'm hoping the folks up at eBureau in St. Cloud will be speaking, and several others. And there's going to be it's not just going to be for geeks, for math and statistics folks. It's going to be for general business. There'll be a track for general business people too, learn about what all this means to them, the insights that they're going to gain from, all these analytics tools, and so much data being accumulated, and how the heck do you find the insights in all this data? That's basically what it's going to be about.
Well, and it's the things that are happening in the analytics space with data is pretty amazing. You remember when AOL had that data leak, and some researchers from, I think, Carnegie Mellon went through the data, and they were able to identify, based on what was being searched on and so forth, the woman who was in her 60s, who lived in, I think, Vermont or Massachusetts or something, and they were actually able to identify a specific person, even though they didn't have her name. And so when you look at predictive analytics, you can follow patterns. I mean, if you take a look at a Target store, And because my wife was a buyer, we're really aware of this stuff. If you look at where they're putting clearance items, they're putting them on the back of the back end cap shelf. So you have to walk down the aisles, or you have to walk down the back. And basically, what it does is it's like putting cheese down for mice. you put the cheese back there, and all of a sudden people are walking back there, and now they're walking up and down the aisles like they never have before, and it's been a brilliant strategy. So it's just little stuff like that, and they did that based on analyzing traffic patterns and then testing putting the clearance items back there, and discovered it worked. And
Target has a very strong analytics organization. In fact, the only one of these analytics things that I've attended was one that Mini Analytics co-sponsored with Target, and it was called the Retail Analytics Forum, and it was downtown at St. Thomas, downtown Minneapolis. When was it? Last summer, maybe? And it was extremely interesting, even for somebody not involved in retail. They're a big player in that space. Target is.
Wow. Well, what else? That's about Iowa Festival at the Walker, we've talked about before, and Tech Masters. The Toastmasters thing is ongoing. And
we're planning on not next week, but the following week, doing the podcast from MHTA. Am I right on that, guys?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, what day of the week is that?
It's so Wednesday the 25th.
Oh, it is a Wednesday. Okay, right. Yep.
Be right. There, aloha.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Sounds great. So an action-packed week on the Men of 8 Gang podcast. So we'll see you next week. Sound good?
Take care.
Yeah. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Come help me, man.